We talk about the treatment of Jews then, the 40s. You recall how the blacks were treated?
No, there were no blacks in my classes. I never had a black friend. I never had a black teacher. There were no black teachers in my schools. There weren't any black students in the schools. I wasn't aware of the race riots and that sort of thing at all. I was not aware of it. I probably should have been, but I was not. I found out later, and I read about it, but I didn't have a black teacher or a classmate until I got to TU. There were a few blacks there, but not very many.
Do you remember Tulsa itself and downtown then?
Yes.
Speaking of blacks, did you ever see the signs of no blacks here? Or?
I don't remember that. But there were no blacks in the movies. Blacks didn't go to the movies with us. Mm-hmm. They had their own, I think, on the north side.
And north side, right.
Now, in the early beginning, we lived on the north side, but I don't remember it.
Was there some time that you met somebody that you became very fond of and decided to live your life with that person?
You mean my husband?
I am. I'm kind of sneaky here, right?
I went to a dance at Congregation B'nai Amunah. There was a kitchen and then a stairway leading up from the kitchen to the outdoors, to the back. On a Saturday night, once a month, we would have a dance for soldiers that came in from Camp Gruber. Camp Gruber was near Muskogee, if I'm remembering correctly. I was introduced to this man at the dance. I was majoring in history at Tulsa University. And this woman introduced me to a soldier who was also majoring in history. We met at this dance, and he said, "Would you write me?" And I said, "Okay," and I wrote my address down for him. I got a letter from him from Camp Gruber. He was getting ready to leave Gruber and go to California for additional training. And he said, "Would I please answer him?" So I did, and we corresponded back and forth. He then asked me not to wait for his letters, but to write as often as I could. And I did. He was on a ship bound for the war in Japan when the bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and Japan surrendered because they were atomic bombs. So instead of continuing to Japan, he was sent to the Philippine Islands. And the reason he went to the Philippines, if you'll remember, MacArthur left the Philippines and went south. The Japanese were in control of the Philippine Islands for a number of years. They had taught a tribe, Hukbalahoop was the name of the Indian tribe in the Philippines. They had taught that tribe to kill Americans. They had told them Japan would never surrender, and they wouldn't have had the bombs not been atomic bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He was sent to the Philippine Islands to try to take care of this uprising. He was there for a couple of years. He was then sent to San Antonio to be separated from the army. By the way, his home was in Florida. His family had lived in a small town, and he had ended up at the University of Florida. That's where he had graduated college. He had come to Tulsa. He wanted to get married, and I told him to go home because he hadn't seen his mother. Still hadn't seen her, and he'd been gone for, I don't know, 3 years or so.
And you know, we should state his full name here right now.
His name was Sidney Merrill Brouse. His dad had died already. His mother married 3 or 4 times. She was reared in an orphanage. Her father had deserted the family and moved out, so she was reared in an orphanage. At the orphanage, the women were persuaded to learn the trade of beautician. They learned how to set hair and that sort of thing. They didn't go to school or anything. They were given training in trades. They were taught to become self-sufficient. That's what she did. She was a beautician. She had already been married once. That marriage ended. Her second husband was my husband's father. He had a half-brother. My husband didn't know that he was a half-brother, but he was. He only found out in later years that his father was different from the father my husband knew.
He wanted to come to Tulsa, but you told him to go to Florida. Yeah. He wanted to get married.
I told him to go home.
So then sometime he came back because then you were married.
No, he wrote my father a letter asking for my hand in marriage. My dad was very impressed. Nobody was writing to fathers asking for their daughters' hands in marriage in those years.
And so you had obviously committed yourself to him already, so he knew that.
Yeah, and we got married.
November 3rd, 1946.
Yeah. I think the remarkable thing about this courtship was that it was a courtship by correspondence. You know, they saw each other at this dance. It was, hi, how are you? Let's talk a little bit. Let's have a couple of dances. That's it. Then they don't see each other again. They write each other. And somehow these letters between each other click. We do not have any of these letters. We don't know where they are.
I wasn't saving them.
He comes back and proposes. So somehow...
You have to understand that there weren't any men around all the time I was in college.
Jewish men.
There weren't men, period, on campus.
But you also were going to be careful to marry a Jew, weren't you?
Well, I was never asked by a non-Jewish man to go out. I wasn't asked by a Jewish man to go out. There weren't any men around. There really weren't. Those were the years when Franca, I think that was his name, was the coach at TU. He had winning football teams. They were all 4F. They were people who were injured.
Right.
Otherwise, they would have been in the service.
But this marriage, as Brian just stated, it was kind of, hi, how are you, how are you?
Yeah,
and then it was through letters.
Yeah.
It lasted how many years?
He died in 99.
So about 53 years or so.
Oh, yeah, we celebrated 50 years.
Yeah, it worked. Something clicked.
Well, there were a lot of reasons why it clicked. Number one, he was a college graduate. Very few men were graduates of college in those early years because of the war. They had dropped out of college. Many of them wanted to go to college, but had dropped out because they had to be in the service.
Yeah.
My husband, by the way, stayed in the service. Eisenhower was elected president, and my husband figured we would be back at war in 6 months with the military man as president. So he stayed in the reserves. He went to Army camp every summer. That's where he spent his vacations. He went to Army meetings once a week. At night, when the reserve unit that he belonged to in Tulsa was called to active duty for a while, the head of the group asked my husband if he would stay in Tulsa and keep the group alive because he wanted to have it to come back to. And my husband said, yeah, he was glad to stay in Tulsa because by then he was working, had a job, and we were married. He wanted to stay in Tulsa.
Children, then, name them from your marriage.
My first child was a girl. Her name was Carol. My husband and I lived with my folks when she was born. She was born...
in 1948, January 24th.
Yeah. Brian was born 2 years later.
About 2.5 years later, November the 12th, 1950.
Then by the time Brian was born, we were living in an apartment. By the way, we lived with my folks for two reasons. Not only financial reasons, but because you couldn't rent an apartment. There was no building.
Housing was short. With the soldiers coming back,
There
was just a huge demand and little supply on housing.
Absolutely.
What did your husband do then?
My husband had sold shoes on Saturday, one of the jobs he had when he was going to college. He was in ROTC in college. He was in advanced ROTC. He had been called up to active duty when he was a senior in college because he was in ROTC. He went to the Battle of the Bulge in Britain. He served in Patton's Third Army.